A1, the hits on both platforms.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Brian Lynn.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. Coming up, Andrew Smith presents Ask a Teacher. We also have words and their stories from Anna Mateo. And we close the show with an American story. But first,
Sarawaka Kiyoshi is a 74-year-old surfer and classical Japanese dancer. Now Sarawaka is interested in a new event for the 2024 Olympic Games in Paris, breakdancing. I used to see kids breakdancing under the railroad tracks and would think to myself, I'd probably be one of them if I were young, Sarawaka said. And now, breaking is going to be added in Paris, and Japan even has a gold medal candidate. Sarawaka is a member of a seniors breakdancing group. It is Ara Style Senior, Japan's only breakdancing group made up of older citizens. On a recent Friday, 8 members gathered in a community center to prepare for a performance at a local celebration. They wore orange and green t-shirts. The team is the result of work by Reiko Maruyama, 71, an elected official in Tokyo's Edogawa area. Maruyama had been speaking with Yusuke Arai, the son of a friend and a former national breaking champion. Maruyama presented the idea of getting older people into breakdancing. I told him, now that it's going to be an Olympic discipline, this is the breakthrough moment, she said. Arai, who has judged breaking competitions, agreed. Arai started with Maruyama as his only older student early last year. He suggested that Maruyama join the children he teaches in a performance that would be held at a community center last spring. Not wanting to be the only adult in a sea of school children, Maruyama asked Sarawaka to join. I want to spread breaking among seniors in Edogawa, and from Edogawa to the rest of Japan, and maybe even the world, Maruyama said. At the recent gathering, music played. The women took their places and did their dance movements. There were plenty of smiles. You can't help but laugh when you see yourself in these funny poses, said the councilwoman. She added, I think it's great that you can laugh, dance, and stay healthy, and that's why I recommend it to people around me. Ara Style Senior now has about 15 members. I'm John Russell.
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we continue to answer the question from Edilson in Brazil about the difference between though and however. Hi, this is Edilson from Brazil. I follow Ask a Teacher and I love the way you approach explanations. I have a question. Could you please explain? What is the difference between the use of the words though and however? Last week, we said though and however are words that show a relationship between ideas. They express a difference in two or more things. We explained some differences in how and when we use the two words. Their use in a clause is another difference between though and however. This is one of the biggest problems English learners have using words like though and however. So, it is important to talk about. First, let's review some terms and their meanings. A clause is a grammar unit organized around a verb phrase. A clause is made of two parts, a subject and a verb. For example, we laughed is a clause. We is the subject and laughed is the verb. In the morning is not a clause because it does not have a verb. There are two main kinds of clauses. Independent clauses are not dependent on any other clause. They are sentences on their own. We laughed is an independent clause. A dependent clause depends on an independent clause. It cannot be a sentence on its own. Before I went, for example, is a dependent clause. While it has a subject and a verb, it requires additional information to be a full sentence or thought. Now, let's return to though and however. We only use however to show a relationship between independent clauses. This means it must be used with two full thoughts. For example,
climate change affects every part of the world. However, it affects some countries more than others. The school can receive $2 million for improving attendance. However, the staff may not be able to keep records.
In writing, we must always use a period or a semicolon between the two clauses. Though can be used with a dependent or independent clause. Using though at the beginning of a clause makes a dependent clause.
Though Ava does well in school,
although this clause does have a subject and a verb, it requires additional information to be a full thought. It must be used with an independent clause. For example,
though Ava does well in school, she is not sure if she wants to go to university.
As we learned last week, though can also be used at the end of an independent clause. For example,
Mohammed makes me angry sometimes. I like him, though.
We hope this explanation helps you, Edilson. Do you have a question about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Andrew Smith.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. Today, we talk about something found in water. Waves. Surfers are experts at riding waves in the ocean. But even if you have never been in the ocean or tried the sport of surfing, you can still ride the waves. If you ride the wave of something, you gain from a widespread popularity or approval of something. The online dictionary, Merriam-Webster, defines it this way. to experience a time when many people share a strong feeling or attitude about something at the same time. For example, let's say a woman runs for office, but she doesn't have any political experience. She does, however, belong to a famous and popular political family. After she wins, many people say she rode the wave of her family's fame. But this expression doesn't always mean taking advantage of something in a bad way. For example, a sports team may want to ride the wave of their recent wins to keep on winning. Catching the wave is a similar expression. If you catch the wave, you also take advantage of an opportunity. You are at the right place at the right time. Now, sometimes we aren't riding or catching waves, but making waves instead. When we make waves, we do something that makes people notice us. Often they notice us in a bad way, and the waves we make cause problems. Similar to waves in water, making trouble for boats and swimmers. Here's an example. If you start a new job, it is usually not a good idea to make waves. When you make waves, you create trouble and interfere with usual business operations. We can also say to rock the boat. This also means to cause problems. We use the word wave in several phrasal verbs. Let's start by combining it with on and off. Waving someone on is the same thing as giving them a sign to keep moving. For example, when police officers direct traffic, they wave people on. The police are guiding drivers or walkers across roads. Waving someone on can also mean to encourage someone. If your friend is running in a race, you can wave them on to the finish line. However, if you wave something or someone off, you cancel, dismiss, or refuse them. For example, when I offered help to the man who had fallen off his bike, he just waved me off. He either didn't need or want my help, or maybe was too embarrassed to accept it. You can also combine wave with down. To wave down someone or something is also a signal to stop. For example, you can wave down a friend or wave down a taxi cab. And if you wave something or someone aside, you are either directing them or dismissing them. It depends on the situation. Now, let's hear some of these wave terms used in a short example. Once I invited a friend to a concert. The musical group was very popular. They were riding the wave of a similar but earlier rock and roll band. Many people would come to their concerts just to gather in the parking lot and listen to the music from a distance. And that is what happened during this concert. But this venue was different than most. It was outside and did not have a barrier around it. So people without tickets started sneaking in. Someone would find a place where they could sneak in and wave on others to do the same. As a result, the venue got so crowded that the security guards had to wave ticket holders aside to a different entrance. And if you didn't have a ticket and hadn't snuck in, they just waved you off. As my friend and I waited in line to enter, I warned her that the concert would be very crowded. But she waved my concerns aside. She didn't care. We went in anyway. But after the concert was over, I immediately waved down a taxi to go home. I had had enough of the large crowd. And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
Our story today is called Athenaïs. It was written by Kate Chopin. Here is Barbara Klein with the story.
Athenaïs went away one morning to visit her parents, 10 miles back on the Bon Dieu River in Louisiana. She did not return in the evening, and Cazot, her husband, was worried. Cazot expressed his worries to his servant, Félicité, who served him dinner. He ate alone by the light of a coal oil lamp. Félicité stood nearby like a restless shadow.
"Only married 2 months and she has her head turned already to leave? It is not right," she said.
Cazot shrugged his shoulders. Félicité's opinion of his wife's behavior after 2 months of marriage did not matter to him. He was used to being alone and did not mind a night or two of it. Cazot stood up and walked outside. The night was beginning to deepen and gather black around the groups of trees in the yard. Far away, he could hear the sound of someone playing an accordion. Nearby, a baby was crying. Cazot's horse was waiting, saddled. He still had much farm work to do before bedtime. He did not have time to think about Athenaïs, but he felt her absence like a deep pain. Before he slept that night, Cazot was visited by an image of Athenaïs' pale young face, with its soft lips and sensual eyes. The marriage had been a mistake. He had only to look into her eyes to feel that, to sense her growing dislike of him. But the marriage could not be undone, and he was ready to make the best of it, and expected the same effort from her. These sad thoughts kept Cazot awake far into the night. The moon was shining, and its pale light reached into the room. It was still outside, with no sound except the distant notes of the accordion. Athenaïs did not return the next day, although her husband sent a message to do so through her brother, Monteclin. On the third day, Cazot prepared his horse and went himself in search of her. Athenaïs' parents, the Michets, lived in a large home owned by a trader who lived in town. The house was far too big for their use. Upstairs, the rooms were so large and empty that they were used for parties. A dance at the Michet home and a plate of Madame Michet's gumbo were pleasures not to be missed. Madame Michet was sitting on the porch outside the house. She stood up to greet Cazot. She was short and fat, with a cheery face, but she was clearly tense as Cazot arrived. Monteclin was there, too, but he was not uneasy. He made no effort to hide his dislike of Cazot. "Dirty pig," he said under his breath as Cazot climbed the stairs to the porch. Monteclin disliked Cazot for refusing to lend him money long ago. Now that this man was his sister's husband, he disliked him even more. Michel and his oldest son were away. They both respected Cazot and talked highly of him. Cazot shook hands with Madame Michel, who offered him a chair. Athénaïs had shut herself in her room. "You know, nothing would do last night," Madame Michel said. "Athénaïs just had to stay for a little dance. The boys would not let their sister leave." Cazot shrugged his shoulders to show he knew nothing about last night. "Didn't Monteclin tell you we were going to keep Athénaïs?" she asked. But Monteclin had told him nothing. "And how about the night before?" asked Cazot. "And last night? Do you have dances every night?" Madame Michel laughed and told her son to go tell Athénaïs her husband had arrived. Monteclin did not move. "You know as well as I do that it is no use to tell Athénaïs anything," said Monteclin. "You and Pa have been talking to her since Monday. When Athénaïs said she was not returning to Cazot, she meant it." Two fiery red spots rose to Cazot's cheeks. What Monteclin said was true. Upon arriving home, Athénaïs had announced she was there to stay. It was difficult for her to understand why she had married. Girls were just expected to get married. And she did like Cazot. Monteclin had asked Athénaïs to explain herself. He had asked her if Cazot abused her or if he drank too much. "No," Athénaïs had said. "It is just being married that I hate. I do not like being Mrs. Cazot. I want to be Athénaïs Michel again. I do not like living with a man, all his clothing everywhere, and his ugly bare feet." At the time, Monteclin had been sorry his sister had no serious evidence to use against Cazot. And now there was Cazot himself looking like he wanted to hit Monteclin. Cazot stood up and went inside the house to his wife's room. "Athénaïs, get ready," he said quietly. "It is late, and we do not have time to lose." Athénaïs was not prepared for his calm request. She felt a sense of hopelessness about continuing to rebel against the idea of marriage. She gathered her hat and gloves. Then she walked downstairs past her brother and mother, got on her horse, and rode away. Cazot followed behind her. It was late when they reached home. Cazot once more ate dinner alone. Athénaïs sat in her room crying. Athénaïs's parents had hoped that marriage would bring a sense of responsibility so deeply lacking in her character. No one could understand why she so hated her role as wife. Cazot had never spoken angrily to her, or called her names, or failed to give her everything she wanted. His main offense seemed to be that he loved her, and Athénaïs was not a woman to be loved against her will. At breakfast, Athénaïs complained to her husband.
Why did you have to marry me when there were so many other girls to choose from? She asked. And it is strange that if you hate my brother so much, why would you marry his sister? I do not know what any of them have to do with it, Kazo said. I married you because I loved you. I guess I was fool to think I could make you happy. I do not know what else to do but make the best of a bad deal and shake hands over it. It now seemed to Atenaise that her brother was the only friend left to her in the world. Her parents had turned from her, and her friends laughed at her. But Monteclin had an idea for securing his sister's freedom. After some thought, Atenaise agreed to his plan. The next morning, Cazo woke up to find his wife was gone. She had packed her belongings and left in the night. Cazo felt a terrible sense of loss. It was not new. He had felt it for weeks. He realized he had missed his chance for happiness. He could not think of loving any other woman, and could not imagine Atenaise ever caring for him. He wrote her a letter stating that he did not want her back unless she returned of her own free will. Atenaise had escaped to the big city of New Orleans. She was staying at a private hotel that Monteclin had chosen and paid to rent for a month. A woman named Sylvie owned the hotel and took good care of Atenaise. Atenaise soon became friends with Mr. Gouvernail, who was also staying at the hotel. This friendship helped her feel less lonely about missing her family. But Mr. Gouvernail soon started to fall in love with Atenaise. He knew she was uninformed, unsatisfied, and strong-willed, but he also suspected that she loved her husband, although she did not know it. Bitter as this belief was, he accepted it. Atenaise's last week in the city was coming to an end. She had not found a job and was too homesick to stay any longer. Also, she had not been feeling well. She complained in detail about her sickness to Sylvie. Sylvie was very wise, and Atenaise was very stupid. Sylvie very calmly explained to Atenaise that she was feeling sick because she was pregnant. Atenaise sat very still for a long time thinking about this new information. Her whole being was overcome with a wave of happiness. Then she stood up, ready to take action. She had to tell her mother, and Cazo. As she thought of him, a whole new sense of life swept over her. She could not wait to return to him. The next day, Atenaise spent traveling home. When she arrived at Cazo's, he lifted her out of the horse carriage, and they held each other tight. The country night was warm and still, except for a baby crying in the distance. "Listen, Cazo," said Atenaise, "how Juliet's baby is crying. Poor darling. I wonder what is the matter with it."
That's all the time we have for today's show, but join us again tomorrow for another VOA Learning English program. Thanks for listening. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Brian Lynn.